Hi folks, and welcome to the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters, episode 36, where Bo and I are going to be talking about Lycurgus, the communist lawgiver of Sparta. Yeah. Sorry, I can't keep it in. It had to be done. He's a commie. He sounds like Lenin.
He's a collectivist, isn't he?
It's not just that he's a collectivist. I mean, like, he's literally imposing communism on Sparta.
It looks and sounds very much like communism, doesn't it?
It's incredibly like
not even socially full-blown communal living, no property, all sorts of stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah. Nobody owns everything, anything. Everyone's like allocated a certain plot of land from the state, which the state owns. Women are to be treated exactly the same as men. And all of, you know, we're abolishing money effectively as well. I'm introducing, I'm jumping ahead a lot here. But it just really like, and the veneration about Lycurgus is just like, wow, no, he was awful.
And having nice things, the idea that luxury is evil, must be done away with for everyone.
It's incredibly austere.
Yeah.
Incredibly austere. And don't get me wrong, there is a part of me that can respect this kind of austerity, but not when it's imposed on a people. It has to be chosen for oneself, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting way ahead of everything.
Which dive straight into the meat of it.
Yeah, I know, but it really bothers me. It was like, oh, Lycurgus was cool. It's like, no, he wasn't cool. It's a commie. Tell you who was cool, Solon, okay? We'll do a different episode on Solon. Anyway, so let's begin at the beginning. Lycurgus was probably a real person, yep.
Probably.
More likely than Theseus, I would say.
Yeah.
And he's alleged to have lived at some point, but we're not sure.
So again, a bit quite like Theseus is that the chronology is confused. It's not as bad as Theseus, but so some say that he was contemporary with the Trojan War or with Homer, certainly. Well, and Homer himself is not really a single person. Almost certainly.
Although there probably, again, was someone called Homer who was a poet.
Right.
I mean, the things that are ascribed to him.
Yeah. You
know. But and so that was supposed to be about the 9th century BC, something like that?
Yeah, roughly. Right. Something like that. So yeah, like 9th century.
And like, and the, you know, it's alleged that Lycurgus knew Homer.
Yeah, yeah. And some people say that it might be much, much later than that, 7th century BC or something. Or some say that he was involved in sort of the inaugural games, which is like the 770s BC.
Yeah, so 8th century.
So, yeah, so 8th century. But whatever it is, it's not clear.
Yeah.
But it does seem that the way he's spoken about and written about, it does seem to have been a little bit more rooted in real life than, say, Theseus.
Yeah.
So there's not lots and lots connected to his story that's sort of purely like fiction, like must be fictional, like he's descended from a god or anything like that.
Well, I was gonna bring that up. It's remarkable how mythological Lycurgus's life actually is. There's nothing in it, as far as I can remember, that's actually fanciful.
No, right, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there's nothing at all, I don't think.
No.
Where you're like, well, that's obviously not true.
Yeah.
Can't be true. It's
Is he
like
the
that,
son
really.
Of Zeus? Well, they don't claim that.
But we are going to go by, it's worth saying straight away, we're going to go by Plutarch's account, Lives. But he is mentioned by all sorts of people, Herodotus and Thucydides, Xenophon, Plato, mentioned by Polybius, mentioned by all sorts of people sort of in passing.
And Plutarch does point this out as well, being like, well, there's like, you know, a dozen stories about him. They're all conflicting, so... What am I supposed to take from this?
And again, like Theseus, Plutarch will mention historians that are now lost to us. Hmm. Like a couple of times he mentions a Spartan historian who, you know, is lost.
Yeah.
He says, like, only this guy says this about Lycurgus. No one else says that. Right. For example, that he went to Egypt is one of those things. But
well, doesn't Plutarch claim that the Egyptians claim that Lycurgus came there?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's probably just latching onto a famous name, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Or maybe, it's good to claim that Hercules came to your city once, or Theseus came to your city once. Apparently in Egypt, it might be where he got the idea of a standing army. But again, it doesn't really make any sense, that, does it?
Well, doesn't it?
Well, no, didn't Sparta have a standing army before him? He reformed all sorts of military things, but it's not like he was the first one to have the idea that they should have a standing army. All that was already in place.
Was it though? I'm not sure that's true.
Is it not?
I don't know. Like,
well, I believe so, because he reforms things. You know, the idea that a full citizen will be a warrior and all the field work's left to the helots and stuff. All that was already there.
Well, I don't know if it was, because the helots, were they not conquered in like the 6th century BC?
Well, yes. But Plutarch just talks as though they're already, it's already the case. He talks about it in a little bit of detail.
He does talk as if that's the case, which is, I think, a failure on his part.
Right. Yeah, could be.
But the thing is that this is another like common trope for lawgivers as well. The same thing for Solon as well. Where, oh, he travelled to Egypt, learned a bunch of stuff off the Egyptians, and then came back. Because Egypt was known to be an ancient land even in that time. So it was prestigious, you know, there's time-honoured wisdom there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, they're the custodians of some ancient wisdom.
Exactly, yeah.
Well,
I mean, don't get me wrong, they probably were. I don't want to take anything away from them, you know, they probably were. But yeah, it's, you know, who knows?
One of the things you've said, they've called him the lawgiver, which is sort of his main thing. If Theseus is known as sort of a unifier, thing that quite often, the epithet that quite often gets connected to Lycurgus is the lawgiver. Because he was a king briefly, we'll get into it, but he wasn't really the king of Sparta for most of his life.
No, not so.
But he is sort of the lawgiver.
Yes.
And it makes me think of Judge Dredd's pistol. It's called the Lawgiver. I can't get that out of my mind.
It makes me think of Karl Marx writing a manifesto. You know, here are the laws of communism, effectively. Mm-hmm. And they're from Lycurgus, and you can't question that, can you? So, you know, do as you're told.
But, Plutarch does say, right at the beginning, he says explicitly, every single story has got discrepancies in it.
Yeah.
There's different versions of every story. So again, just like Theseus in that sense. So again, if we say something or I say something, you're like, oh, that's not quite what I thought I'd heard. Well, it's because there'll be more than one.
Yeah, you doubtless heard differently legitimately.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like Xenophon's account of things won't be exactly the same as, say, Plutarch's. But yeah, one of the things I would say is that I used to quite often get Lycurgus mixed up with Lysander. Oh, and other than being Spartan leaders, they're very, very, very different men.
Separated by
400 or 500 years.
And Lysander was different. Definitely real.
There's
no reason to think that Lysander's, you know, the stories on him are fairly concrete.
In the full light of history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I haven't got a good reason why I would used to confuse them. It's like I would usually always confuse them. Exactly, it's all it is.
That's all it is.
Like Lewis Carroll and C.S. Lewis, I get those mixed up in my mind. Yeah. I know they're very different people, but anyways.
No, I'm with you on that. Right, so let's talk about his early life.
Okay, so his father was the king of Sparta.
I've got to pause on that, right, Kate. So I thought Sparta had a dual kingship.
Right.
So he was a king of Sparta.
Yes, but Plutarch doesn't ever mention
there's
another king.
I was going to bring that up. And yet, like, I thought that the Spartan dual kingship was something that went back into the mists of time.
Yeah.
And so Plutarch, you seem to have dropped the ball here.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know. We can never know, really, if that was deliberate or not. But he makes out as though there's a single king.
Yeah. It's concerning, that, isn't it? Because we, like, in other times, he talks about the dual kingship in his lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not like he didn't know that Sparta had two kings. And so at some point, like, either the Spartans have decided to inherit a new king from Eurypontid and I can't remember the names of the families that the kings came from, but they're both meant to be descended from Hercules, and they're meant to, you know, literally go back into the Trojan era, right? And so there's no way that at the time of Lycurgus, Sparta didn't have a dual kingship. So it sounds like it's a myth that's been stolen from somewhere else.
Well,
you know, because, there's the kings, you know, it's like in the Bible, it's like, well, the gods got together and then did it. Well, I thought you said there was one god. So, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we didn't nick this from the Babylonians or anything. Like, you know, it sounds like that to me, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can sort of fill in the gaps that way for sure. I just don't know. I feel like he definitely knew, so no question about that, whether Plutarch knew there was supposed to be two kings.
Yeah.
I feel like for whatever reason, he has picked these particular stories and just omitted it. Just left it.
Just a convenient tale, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose it's a tiny bit lazy on his part not to mention it, it's kind of inexplicable.
It's surprisingly uncritical, though, because Plutarch, in other ways, is quite reflective and self-critical about the stories he's telling, you know? And so it's bizarre that you get a very, like, propagandistic story.
Yeah.
It's obviously not true.
And it will quite often say, there's this account, but I don't think it's all that good. Or this account, I think it's reasonably good, but I'm not sure. So he's got a kind of a modern sounding take on historiography to a degree. I mean, to a degree. It's just omitted. He just says, here's the story of the one king and that's it. I think perhaps you know, it's pure speculation this, but in Plutarch's mind, he didn't want anything to detract from Lycurgus.
Possible.
And so he'll just do this.
Because this is fan fiction for Lycurgus the communist.
Yeah.
The party says there's only one king, comrade. No, I'm done. Joking. I'm going to try and set aside my biases now. My pro-Athenian bias.
So the story was that his father, the king, was just stabbed in a street fight to death. and so Lycurgus had an older brother who inherited and a queen who he'd got pregnant. But then he died, and Plutarch doesn't tell us why, he just says he died. Hmm. And so then it passes to legitimately Lycurgus, who then rules for about 8 months as king. Mm-hmm. But then when his nephew is born, he effectively abdicates in favour of his newborn nephew and acts as more of a regent rather than a full king.
Yeah, because the nephew has a more strong lineal claim. Yeah, the moral of the story is that Lycurgus is abandoning the absolute power of the kingship on principle. He's being noble. And this, again, is not a new or unique story. I mean, this is what Cincinnatus is said to have done for the Romans, things like this. And there are, you know, lots of examples of people being venerated for handing back power when they didn't have to. And so it's interesting how that's also in the story of Lycurgus. Mm. It's fascinating.
Yeah, being just. Like Cincinnatus being elected dictator, absolute dictator, and giving it up after 10 days. Go win a battle, come home and give it up. Yeah. I mean, that goes through even to the age of Augustus, where it's a sham.
Yeah.
But he'll go before the Senate and say, I renounce all my powers. And they say, well, you best have them, actually, indefinitely. it's the opposite of Richard III. It just sprung to mind. Richard III murdered his own nephews in order to...
Good point.
In order to remain being king, whereas Lycurgus does the opposite.
But nevertheless... Richard III wasn't a commie.
Yeah. As a regent, though, he would have still had, well, his authority was kind of unquestioned. But it's sort of a noble thing. And then the next sort of stage of his life is his travels.
Mm.
It's kind of up for debate a little bit.
Yeah, the reason he goes on his travels is so if anything happens to the nephew while he's a boy, then Lycurgus can't be held accountable for it.
Yeah, well, there's that also, yeah.
He can't be accused that he did it. Hmm. He wasn't even Sparta. What was I supposed to have done?
Yeah.
And so he goes off for like a 20-year journey around the Mediterranean. Eastern Mediterranean.
Yeah. And as we already mentioned, he may or may not have gone to Egypt, but they all seem to agree, or more or less agree, that he did go to Crete.
Yes.
And there he found relatively, I was going to say Spartan, but people that were, austere?
Yeah, disciplined.
Disciplined.
Yeah.
Not extravagant, not in love with pleasure or luxury.
Fellow Dorians, I believe they were. Right, but it's hard to believe that from the Minoan culture, which was extravagant and commercial, you end up with a culture that has no interest in commerce at all.
Yeah,
little. Yeah, the Dorian sort of austere Dorian culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another parallel with communism, isn't it? The way you deal with money. We'll get into that in a sec, I guess. Apparently when he went to Crete, there was lots of things there that he learnt, which he liked and would take back. And then the next thing is he would go over to, apparently went over to sort of the Ionian coast, the west coast of Turkey, and there found examples of people or polities, ways of conducting politics, which he didn't like.
Yes.
There it was all very extravagant, very individualistic. And,
very wealthy.
Very wealthy.
Very very much like the Athenians, incidentally. This is the ethnic split within this section of the Greek world, isn't it? You've also got the Aetolians in the north. But the Ionians and Dorians, basically east and west of the Aegean. And, they obviously have a kind of ethnic character to them, because wherever you see the Dorians, they are all basically stolid, dull, uninspiring, communistic. Sorry, I'm going on about it. But, the Ionians, everywhere that they're presented as being very interesting and active. The philosophers always come from Ionian cities, and they're very much open and out in the world and things like this. It's a very interesting contrast of these two coexisting cultures in the Greek world. They're both recognized as Greeks. They just have very different ways of looking at the world, though.
No, absolutely. It's funny where you get a culture or a civilization that is very, very austere, shall we say, if we want a better word, but it kind of kills innovation.
Oh, totally.
And this is exactly what happened. I mean, Lycurgus sort of does away with all artisans, yes. all art.
Yeah.
It kind of leaves you, yeah, you might be like a bit more righteous, maybe, is not maybe the right word, but yeah. but it does away with this whole other level of the human experience. Just does away with it.
Yes. But I mean, as I understand it, in the Spartan hegemony, of Greece. The other Greeks did have a respect for the austerity of the Spartans.
Oh, massively, yes. You know,
they did respect, and this Callum was telling me about the North Koreans and the South Koreans. And the South Koreans do respect the austerity of the North Koreans. Like they consider themselves to be morally superior because of this austerity. And so I'm not saying there's nothing tangible or important about that. I think that, you know, there probably is. And the Ionians probably recognized it as a bit of a moral failing to be such degenerate hedonists.
Yeah.
Because they were.
Yeah.
No, they were also fun, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Fair enough. There's a quote that I was going to say for later, but I think it says quite a great deal. This is a quote from Plutarch. He says, quote, "He trained his fellow citizens to have neither the wish nor the ability to live for themselves, but like bees, they were to make themselves always integral parts of the whole community, clustering together about their leader, almost beside themselves with enthusiasm and noble ambition, and to belong wholly to their country."
Okay.
But to be illiterate,
yeah.
to never, like literally can't read or write.
Yeah.
Never to create any art, never to innovate.
A kind of illiterate fascist state.
It's like, yeah, you look at the North Koreans, say, and they don't really innovate.
No.
Well, you look at Soviet art. It's one style of art.
Yeah.
We want one style.
And it's got a message in it. It's not saying anything about the human condition. It's saying the party wants you to think this.
And so, yeah, you've done away with sort of some bad aspects of humanity.
Excess.
Of excess, yeah, okay. Yeah. You've sort of dealt with that. But what you're left with is something sort of terribly sterile or something that's kind of doomed, actually, ultimately. If you can't adapt and change and innovate... What are you, really? You're like a worker bee.
There is a reason.
Mindless bee.
There is a reason that Athens is the capital of modern Greece and Sparta is a tiny village near the ruins of a city that people never go to. There's not a train line that goes from Athens to Sparta. Like, I went to visit Athens. Really? I went to visit Athens in like 2012 and I was there with an ex-girlfriend and I wanted to go and see the ruins of Sparta, of course. And I had to ask around. They were like, Sparta. Oh, okay. I mean, you'll have to rent a car and drive. And I was like, okay, don't worry about that. You know, I thought I'd get on a train and go over there. But no, it's just a rural backwater.
An interesting thing to know.
Yeah.
I used to work with a chap who grew up in Sparta.
Hmm.
Quite literally.
Really?
In his back garden of ruins and things. Yeah, he showed me a picture of his home.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, there's just all ruins surrounding his house. Unbelievable, really. Incredible stuff. I'd love to visit, even though I understand there's not a fantastic amount to see. There are a few ruins, a few footprints of things, but there's nothing like the Knossos, for example. Nothing like that.
It's exactly as Thucydides predicted, though, isn't it?
Right.
You know, and for anyone who doesn't know, Thucydides was like, look, if Sparta ever falls into ruin and the people are gone, nobody will believe it was as powerful as it was, just looking at the ruins. Because there's nothing there, you know, because it was a bizarro, austere communist ethno state.
Well, with the worker bee thing, Plutarch mentions it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to get all Kathy Newman about it, but are you saying we should be like the bees? I mean, it's a bit, yeah.
Well, that's absolutely it.
And he's saying be a drone for the country and no more.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And like, there's definitely veneration about the idea of like the state of affairs that's created in Sparta. It's this like, very strictly managed, top-down, you know, planned. It's a planned society, you know, and there's always been, like, a weird dream in the human consciousness. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could rationally plan society? It's like, well, it never has been. We've got examples of this literally going back all the way to Sparta, and all of these examples have been kind of terrible, actually, but there's always been this weird admiration for the idea of a perfectly regimented society. Like a beehive. I don't know. It strikes me as being awful. But
That's
why I'm an Athenian partisan.
It's dehumanizing.
It is.
I'm more than a worker drone.
Thank you
actually.
Very much.
Yeah, thanks.
If you don't mind.
But no, yeah.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.